You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. All right, this is going to be a call and response event, so we're going to try that one more time. Good evening.
Good evening.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the Open Society Institute. My name is Sean Dove. I'm the manager of OSI's campaign for Black Male Achievement, and actually next month we'll mark the one-year anniversary of the campaign that was launched here at OSI, and we'll hear a little bit more about that. But I just want to welcome friends, families, colleagues, co-laborers in this really important mission and work that we're engaged in. And if you look around the room, every seat is taken. A few folks are starting to line up in the back, and I'm just so thrilled to say that this was a standing room only event. We had to turn away 50 individuals. That really shows that there are individuals that are in organizations that are hungry for this information and hungry to come together for more than a community conversation, but for community partnerships and community action. And I'm just so excited that the 21st Century Foundation has given us this opportunity to host this kind of preview. Their full New York launch won't happen into the fall, and we'll hear more about this. And something like this does not happen without leadership. There are so many people that have contributed to this effort, the film being created, and here at OSI's Campaign for Black Male Achievement and the work that OSI does. And I'd like to introduce our Executive Director for U.S. Programs, Ann Beeson. And when we talk about leadership, she has, although she's not wearing it today, a cape with a giant L on it, and we're going to ask Ann to welcome us. And I'd like to introduce Ann Beeson, Executive Director of Open Society U.S. Programs.
Thank you, Sean. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
So good to see you all. We're just so delighted to have such a crowd here. As many of you know, and we're excited to welcome the rest of you into the fold, we are extremely excited about our campaign for Black Male Achievement. We, as Sean mentioned, launched this campaign, and he'll say a little more about it, a little over a year ago. We welcomed Sean, I think, about exactly a year ago, probably the middle of May last year, wasn't it? And even before that, have had a long-standing commitment in U.S. programs to advancing racial justice, ensuring equality for all people, and we're just delighted to be able to launch this campaign to specifically focus on the challenges faced by Black men and boys. This is just one of a number of events and partnerships that we've been delighted to embark upon in the last year or so, and we're especially pleased to be partnering with the 21st Century Foundation, which has long also had a commitment to Black men and boys, and really just delighted to be able to work with them. I was very fortunate to have had the chance to see the film that you're about to see during one of our retreats for the campaign. It was very moving, very edgy, very well done film, and you are really very much in for a treat. I want to emphasize a couple things. For many of you working in this field, you know that there are, in some ways, you could talk about two different approaches to the challenges of Black men and boys. One which really encourages men and boys themselves to sort of take up the challenge, and this film does that very well. And another which really emphasizes the systems, the terrible systems, whether it's school discipline policies or the criminal justice system or lack of employment opportunities close to where you live. And we at OSI have very much emphasized in our funding the need for systemic reform as well as the need for individuals to take up their own fight. And we don't think that there should be any tension between these two approaches. We think it takes both approaches, and we're really excited that the film does a beautiful job of connecting those two things. So I encourage you to look out for that when you watch the film. Finally, I just want to say that I personally am particularly committed to the importance of using culture to change people's minds. That's what it takes, really. That's where people change the way they think, is in their culture, whether it's popular culture or their indigenous culture or whatever it is. And I think that using films like this and other methods, whether it's hip-hop, spoken word, music, poetry, any of those, that is how we are going to change the reality and the perception of black men in our society. And I think this film just does a beautiful job of proving that. And really, that's it. I just wanted to keep my remarks very brief and tell you I'm really glad to be here with you. And shout out to, again, our partners at 21st Century, and also to the leadership of Sean Dove as the campaign manager for the Campaign for Black Male Achievement here at OSI. So big thanks to Sean. And also to the growing staff, I'm sure he's going to mention this too, but to the growing staff of the campaign, we're really so delighted to welcome Rashid Shabazz, the new program officer with the campaign. Yay, Rashid. And Georgia Kirkland, who is the program associate for the campaign, and both of them have done a lot of work with Sean to put this together. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ann. For those of you who got here a little late, we reserved the first four rows for our young people, our students, and some of you can only see the back of their heads, but I can see their eyes, I can see their smiles, and I can just see so much potential. And if we can just take a moment to give our young men a round of applause. Yeah. And if I know if folks didn't have food in their lap, I would ask you to give them a standing ovation, but we'll do that a little bit later. Raise your hand if you remember 3 years ago, there was a cover story in the New York Times that read, "The Plight of Black Men Deepens." Do you remember? That was one of the most emailed articles of all time in my inbox, and it really highlighted a lot of data and scenarios that many of us who are working on the front lines on these issues and the black community, working with not only black men and boys, but our entire community, that this data was of no surprise to us. But it really highlighted in certain areas a call to arms, that there was a crisis in our community. The Schott Foundation for Public Education puts out an annual report card on high school graduation rates for black males, and the 2008 report is a sad story across the country. It tells a story that in many of our states, in many of our cities, less than 50% of our boys are graduating high school. Right here in this city, 32%, I believe. And we're here not to focus on the pathologies, to focus on the problems. We're here to focus on the solutions, the partnerships, and what it's going to take to really respond to this growing crisis. And while the campaign for black male achievement is initially a three-year strategy, cross-fund strategy that builds on OSI's previous grant making, I want Ann to know that my internal mantra every day is to sustain the campaign, that this is just one small piece of this work happening here at OSI. Everyone in this room is engaged in this work, and this is going to take a generational commitment. We didn't get here overnight. And so it's going to take more than initiatives. It's really going to take philanthropies like OSI leveraging public dollars. And we've just emerged from a strategic planning process, and we know that we're going to be focusing on educational achievement. It's going to be a core area for the campaign. We're also going to be focusing on strengthening family structures and also increasing work opportunities. But when I took this job over a year ago, the one thing that really struck me was a stat that stood out, and it was in response to the information from the Schott report. And it said 60% of our boys that don't graduate eventually wind up in the criminal justice system. 60% of our boys that don't graduate. And I just thought it just really makes sense. We hear about, and we use the term so often, the school to prison pipeline. And it just really made sense for this campaign, or at least a piece of it, to focus on educational outcomes. So I'd like to welcome you to this community gathering. I certainly want to shout out again Rashid Shabazz. Rashid, raise your hand back there, who just recently joined us as our program officer. And standing next to Rashid, to his left, is Georgia Kirkland. And certainly doing the work. And what's really helped here with the campaign in the first year is that it's been a real collaboration. We have a working group, and I think there are some directors in the room. Rakiba Labrie, could you please stand up, Rakiba, in the back row, who is a director of our Equality and Opportunity Fund, and that's the fund under which the campaign lives. So at the end of the day, you know, the evening, please make sure that you meet and greet at least 10 people that you don't know and exchange cards and information and find out how you can partner. I would like to right now invite to the microphone. This is, as you will see in the film, really four young people. And what I really love about this evening is that, you know, how sometimes we come together and we talk about what we are going to do for young people, and young people are not in the room. So we wanted to make sure that young people were in the room and they were at the table. And one young man says, "It's time we started becoming influential in a more positive way to the youth of this world. We as rappers and entertainers, whether we like it or not, have the great responsibility of guiding the up-and-coming generations into a more sturdy and less problematic future." These are the words of entertainer, rapper, leader, Kaws, and to date, Kaws, I love that name. For the Kaws. To date, Kaws has performed all over the Northeast, finding his audience in clubs, college campuses, and on the internet worldwide at OSI. The budding rapper has shared the stage with numerous established artists, having performed alongside Wyclef, DJ Stretch Armstrong, Kids in the Hall, Sean Price, Jurassic 5, and a bunch of other names, which I have to admit, so a lot of them I don't know. I'm showing my age. The witty, slick-tongued, methodical rapper is focused on becoming hip-hop's catalyst for change. Hip-hop's catalyst for change in a genre that has lost its way. Kaws's movement is growing rapidly, and we thank him for showing up to help us celebrate this evening. Let's have a round of applause for Kaws in the house.
How's everybody doing?
All right.
I'm really thankful to Sean and Rashid for actually having me here today to share with you guys. I'm actually kind of nervous because I've never performed in front of so many suits and nicely dressed people. So I just wanted to share something. This was like a little more positive. You know, instead of just talking about the statistics and instead of just talking about some things that are negative, this is something that I wrote in response to the industry and what it is right now for the young people. So it goes something like this. "Sometimes I wonder if they'll play me in clubs, cause I talk against something that the radio loves. At the same time, I got this little feeling in my stomach, I'm the guilty pleasure for the guilty people that run it. The truth of the art, they're the people that stun it. They don't spin it. If you don't spend it, you ain't in it. They feeding us the game, but denying us the scrimmage. That's why the underground faces are always twisting a grimace. The same thing that dwelled in Martin Luther King's spirit is the same thing that makes me pick it up where he finished. So I have to be more than music, because beyond the hip-hop, the streets are still filled with moral confusion. Sick of all these rappers battling back and forth, claiming they carry a cross because they carry by the source. But the streets don't hail them. The streets don't love them. That's why I'm raising the surface and putting the streets above them, because I'm more than music. It's not about dumbing down or smartening up. It's about being a brush for the hearts full of dust, awakening forsaken notions about our placement. The reason the roof is off limits and we subject to the basement. 41 shots through the back of a wallet holder, 51 shots, and the cops are honored as honest soldiers? Whatever happened to the point of them being the problem solvers? Instead, I find the problem lies inside their revolvers. Well, they said, wow. Maybe from a lack of caring or a lack of training, but there's no refraining from what it is I'm declaring. I'm more than music. I'm saying it's more than rap. I don't fade because society's issues are more than black. And then it's because I'm more than music. It's time we make decisions. Is it dark? Is it light? Is it black? Is it white? Do we slack? Do we fight? My mama told me, boy, you can't waste no time. So I don't wait for their court. I make my own baseline. Some say it's too late because they facing time. But I got to reach these young kids before they facing time. Trying to redirect the light so their faces could shine. Change ain't overnight, so I know it got to take time. Just try to keep the courage when the devil shoots at you, because there's angels in the clouds and all of them root for you. I don't speak from what I think. I speak from what I know. I speak from where I've been and how it leads to where I go. I'm 22 years old, but I'm 30 with the flow, 40 with the content till it's 50,000 at my show. You know the old saying, you reap what you sow. I'm planting seeds so these flowers could grow. I'm more than music. Thank you guys for having me.
Let's give Cause another round. And Ann mentioned the importance of arts and culture as a tool for social change. And we're really committed to providing a space and uplifting voices just like Cause. And strategic communications is part of our strategy here at the Open Society Institute around the campaign for Black Male Achievement. Too often, our young men's stories are told, and we have to create a platform where black men and boys can become masters of their own media and tell their own stories. We are so excited. That's why we were really excited at the opportunity when the 21st Century Foundation spoke to us about hosting this New York City premiere of A-Game. And they are really kind of leading leaders in this black men and boys movement that has been happening, the next iteration or the current iteration of it in recent years. And so we are honored to partner with them and be supporters of their work. I would like to invite the chairman of the board, Reverend Alfonso Wyatt, whom I've known for a few decades since I was a young lad. And he is a mentor to many, a leader in the youth development and community building field, who's going to talk a little bit about the 21st Century Foundation, why we are here, and then introduce Reverend John Vaughn, who is going to set the table for the film and introduce the film. So let's welcome Reverend Alfonso Wyatt.
Did I fall asleep and wake up in youth development heaven, where there were people who came from all over to herald young people? Did I fall asleep and wake up and find that there is energy and a desire to make a difference? Did I fall asleep to see young brothers in OSI? Did I fall asleep and wake up and hear hip-hop at OSI? Lord, have mercy. My brother, you are not always, you're not just the cause, you are also the effect. And you in full effect. And we thank you for your gift and for your talent. And because you have given, much will be given back to you, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. I'm speaking into your spirit, son. All right, enough of that. My name is Alfonso Wyatt. I've spent all of my adult life for this moment. The tears, the disappointments, the joys, the setbacks, the getbacks for this moment. To know that there are young brothers in this place to begin to take up the mantle and to take up leadership and to move beyond, that's what it was and is all about. I thank you for the opportunity as a leader in the field and as a leader of the 21st Century Foundation. And when I bring John, you'll do the introductions of staff. I want you to do that because I want you to meet people that did not forget. You know, sometimes people get in position and then they get out of position. That they get blessed to the point where they no longer see themselves as a blessing, but that their blessing is an end unto itself. But the folk at the 21st Century Foundation care about the issues, cares about the mission, and in retrospect, was tabbed to bring this day together. I would be remiss before I introduce my brother John, and this is, I guess, the Reverend's hour, to say that sometimes you can walk and live a life where there is a certain synchronicity, where things come together and it don't look like it's coming together, but when the time that it hits, it all meshes. This synchronicity today started some years ago when the young woman, Karen Williams, please, Karen, raise your hand, stand up there, stand up. She came to my office, as many people do, seeking direction, prayers, money. I talked to her about her program. I was just focused on her program. And the more I asked her about her program, the more curious I became about her program. The quality of it was excellent. Her thought about it was impeccable. And as we started talking, found out more that she was familiar with people that I felt that we should be familiar with, and sent her over to the 21st Century Foundation. Now, little did I know that she would become the co-producer of this work that you're going to see. I know she knew Mario Van Peebles, but all of this is synchronicity and timing. The last that I wanted to say is that if we do not ride this wave, I'm not a surfer, but if I was, I would see ourselves on this big wave. I would see ourselves hanging 10, as they used to say. I would see ourselves on a tidal wave that is moving, on a wave of cultural relevism, on a wave that speaks to the heart, mind, and soul. Our job, beloved, is to be free, and to free the energies, to free the minds, to free the very spirit that we need to get this as far, wide, and deep as possible. This is not about big I's and little U's. This is not about, I'm over here and I do. This ain't about suits, my brother. We do look good today. because if this just rides a wave of pretentiousness, it is just going to peter out. It's zeitgeist. It is the spirit of the times. And we have all been chosen, young and old, to ride this wave as far and deep as it will carry us. We must wake up some folk. We must challenge some folk. We have a foundation that's in the waking up business. We have a foundation that's in the challenging business. We have a foundation with folk who care and who are equipped, who can partner, who can be in the background, who know how to bring technical assistance, who knows how to birth things. So we're in the birthing room. Did I wake up again? In the birthing room. So I'm going to bring one of our lead doctors, a deliverer par excellence, a brother that I've also known since the 80s. And things just come around. And little did we know when you were in East Harlem. Little did we know. But if you live long enough, you'll find out. You heard? All right.
For the young people, have you all heard the phrase 6 degrees of separation? What's it mean? Relationships, like somebody knows somebody who knows somebody, right? So the man that you just met probably knows about half the United States in terms of the ways that he has influenced many, not just in this community, but throughout this country, and dare say even throughout the world. So I'm going to ask Karen to stand again. Karen, who is, I need to tell you specifically what happened. So Karen came to a meeting. We started a conversation around Black men. No, you can't sit down yet. No. We started a conversation around Black, and she held up the document. It was a draft of the report, and she goes, you know what? I want to give this to somebody because I want to give this to my friend Mario Van Peebles. We've been talking about that. We were just talking about this last week. Can I send it to him? And so she sent it to him. And you said Mario read it overnight and said, you know what, I want to do something around this. And so I think we first want to say thank you to Karen and thank you for your work. And about making the connections. The other person I'm going to ask to stand before I ask the whole staff to stand is the president of the 21st Century Foundation, Erica Hunt. Erica, would you do it? So you all need to know that this is a foundation that we were maybe $500,000 a year, you know, about 5-6 years ago. Today, our budget's over $7 million because of her leadership. So thank you, Erica. And I'm going to ask my other colleagues from the 21st Century Foundation staff to stand, wave your hands. All right. So I just want you to encourage you to see the hardest working folks in philanthropy. We started our Black Men and Boys Initiative in 2004. For many of the statistics, I mean, you know these. We all know these personally. You know, folks within our families. It may have been some of us in the room. And we started this because we wanted to find a way to invest into action. We wanted to invest in making a difference. And so that's what we've been doing. We've been investing in organizations that are grooming and doing leadership development, like the Eagle Academy, the Brotherhood Sister Soul, Sisters and Brothers United. We have been investing in coalitions in New York, Chicago, Oakland, Los Angeles, New Orleans, and this fall, Atlanta, Georgia, for groups of organizations and leaders to come together to say, you know what, we're going to change the policies that negatively impact us. You know how schools get funded and not funded? We want to change that. We want to change jobs. We want to change that. We want to affect how this prison, the school-to-prison pipeline works. We want to dismantle it. So we're investing in coalitions that do that. We're also investing in a national effort called the 2025 Campaign for Black Men and Boys. It's a national advocacy and information center. Now, I want to encourage young people to check out the website. It's 2025BMB. Young people like you are creating the content that's going on this website that's talking about what it means, you know, to walk these shoes, to walk the walk that you all are doing every day. But what are the challenges? What's the call to action for us? What are the good things that are happening? This is the place where you find that information, as well as a burgeoning national policy platform. And the third thing that we're doing is this film. Now, I have to tell you that this is one of two films. I think halfway through, Mario and Karen said, you know what, we got two films here. Not just one, we got some people just want to come talk to us. They want to just, they have so much to say. We can't just put it all in one. And so what you got today is Bring Your A Game. It's targeted to young people. But the other film that we have is called Fair Game, and it's targeted to adults. And it actually deals with also the complexities and the challenges, particularly looking at the systemic change, both challenges and what are some of the solutions that are happening. But we're not premiering that tonight. But you'll get a chance to later on down the road to see it. That's our little teaser. Now, before I finish up, I want to do two things. I want to encourage you to go to the website, the A-Game website. It's somewhere listed, www.21cf.org/A-Game. And it should be in some of the materials. But you'll have different guides. You'll have some discussions. There's other kinds of resources that are there, calendars of so we're doing a rollout this summer in Chicago. In Chicago, we're doing one in Oakland this fall. But the second thing I want to do is I want to encourage you is to watch BET this August, because you will see this film on BET this August. And it is around also a lot of the educational programming that BET is going to be doing. This is seen as one of their centerpieces this year. So we need you to tune in August. We don't have the date yet, but as soon as we get a date, we get it out to you, you get it on your calendar, you put it on whatever. We need you to watch this film on BET. That's all I got to say. Well, I need to say thank you. I want to say thank you particularly to the brothers, because you all, I have a 7 and a 3-year-old, both boys. And so you are the ones actually who my boys are going to look up more to than necessarily me. They're going to listen to somewhat of what I got to say, but they're actually going to be listening a lot to you. And so it really means a lot for me for you all to be here, because I want you giving my boys the right message too.
That's right.
Thank you for coming.
That's a powerful film, right? Powerful. And the greater power of the film is what is about to happen right now. This, in and of itself, is inspirational, is informational, but the real potential and power of Bring Your A Game is that it's a tool for what we're about to have now, intergenerational community conversation. It's a tool for community organizing. Reverend Vaughn talked about policy change. It's a tool, as a catalyst for bringing people together around policy change, because we are asking our young people to bring their A game, right? But we got to make sure that we respond to schools that are bringing their F game, to teachers that are bringing their F game, to systems that are failing our young people. So it's a balance. And so this best part of why I really like this film is about to happen now. And so we're going to invite our moderator for the evening, Ms. Felicia Lee, to come up and introduce our panelists. But very quickly, Felicia, this is great to be reconnected with you. She's been a staff reporter for the New York Times since 1988, covering a range of topics for several sections of the newspaper. For the Metro section, she has been an education reporter, covered city politics during the administration of David N. Dinkins, and written about the impact of AIDS on women and children. She has also taught reporting at Columbia University's Graduate School of Journalism, and as a Nieman Fellow at Harvard University in 96-97, she took courses in American history, religion, and African American studies to further her interest in using those topics to deepen her reporting. Felicia was the Köppen columnist for the New York Times section for over 2 years, from 1999 to 2002, writing about life in the city on a more personal level, and was also part of the 2002 Pulitzer Prize winning team of reporters who assembled the Portraits of Grief coverage in the aftermath of 9/11. As a culture reporter in the last decade, she has written extensively about theater, books, art, television, and film. Felicia lives in the city with her husband and children. Let's welcome Felicia Lee, who's going to introduce the panel. And before I hand over the podium, I just want to let everyone know that this event is being recorded. We intend to put a podcast on our website. And also, we're going to be handing out a survey, getting feedback. This is a work in process. So it is very important that the 21st Century Foundation get your feedback, your insights from young people to adults on the film in this evening tonight. Felicia Lee.
Thank you, Sean, for that very nice introduction. It's great to be here. As a mother and as a reporter, I'm really interested in hearing your perceptions, hearing your questions, and getting a discussion going between the panelists and the people in the audience about the film and about all of the broader issues that we've talked about here tonight. How does the problem of dropouts relate to a number of problems in not just the Black community, but in this country right now. But I'm going to start by introducing our panel tonight. Antoine Allen joined the Brotherhood Sister Soul in 2002 when he was in the eighth grade. He's now an alumni member of the Intrinsic King's Chapter of the Brotherhood. He completed the organization's four-year Rites of Passage program and was a member of the Brotherhood Sister Souls Environmental Program, working as a garden landscaper. Antoine presently works as an intern in the Global Realty Services of Citi. He's a graduate of Thurgood Marshall Academy and will be a sophomore at Howard University in the fall. Cassandra Mack has a master's degree in social work, but she wears many hats. Besides being a trained social worker, she's an educator. She is a successful self-published writer. She is a popular conference speaker, and she is the president of Strategies for Empowered Living, Inc., which is a training and developmental company that offers tools for success and personal growth through workshops, consultation services, and products that empower. Cassandra is the voice of counsel to thousands around the world through her blogs, her columns, her radio broadcasts, and her books. She's written and published 10 books that are widely utilized in schools, churches, and health and human service organizations around the country. They include Young, Gifted, and Doing It, 52 Power Moves for Teenagers, and The Single Mom's Little Book of Wisdom, Cassandra Mack. David Banks is the president of the Eagle Academy Foundation, and he was the founding principal of the Eagle Academy for Young Men, which was an innovative all-boys public high school in New York City, established in 2004, and the Academy believes that excellence comes both in character and scholarship. Prior to joining the Eagle Academy, David was the founding principal of the Bronx School for Law, Government, and Justice. At that time, David spearheaded a community-wide effort to get a permanent home for the school. As a result, Bronx Law is now housed in a $75 million state-of-the-art facility, which represents a partnership between the criminal justice system and an inner-city high school. David Banks. Jordan Banks is a 17-year-old senior I'm sorry? Jordan Lewis. Oh, I'm sorry. Jordan Lewis is a 17-year-old senior at the Eagle Academy for Young Men, where he has started a peer mentorship nonprofit called Student to Student for alumni and fellow classmates to counsel their peers on constructive approaches to overcoming challenges in and out of school. Jordan grew up in Harlem, and he plans to attend Manhattanville College in the fall. Is Kevin Powell here?
Yes.
Oh, great. Kevin Powell has been a political and community activist for the past 25 years, working around issues as diverse as quality and affordable housing, Hurricane Katrina relief, violence and domestic violence prevention, public school education, job training and job placement, equality for women, youth homelessness, and many challenges facing young black men in the 21st century. Kevin has written 10 books, or edited 10 books, including his best-selling The Black Male Handbook, A Blueprint for Life, which offers practical and proactive solutions to black men and boys. Kevin Powell. So first, I have to tell everyone that we're being recorded tonight, so hopefully that won't constrain anybody in what they have to say, but, you know, be aware of that. And this is how we're going to set this up. We have about an hour, so 30 minutes will be for the panel. I'm going to throw out some ideas, some questions, based not simply on the film, but just on this whole issue of young black men dropping out, given that about 50% of our young men don't finish high school, and some of the issues connected to that. So I'd like each panelist to take, you know, 2 or 3 minutes to respond to some of the questions I throw out. And then I'd love to see you talk among yourselves about different points that you raise, especially if you find that somebody has an observation or an idea that you don't especially agree with, so that this is more of a discussion as opposed to people talking at each other. And once they've done that for about 30 minutes, we will open up the floor, come up to the mic, and let's talk about some of these things that we've been talking about through the film and some of the other speakers have addressed. And rather than make long statements, because it's, you know, it's a pretty big crowd, let's try to solicit some ideas here. Let's walk away with maybe reframing our thinking about some of these issues and maybe walking away with some solutions. It was a great film, and the reason I especially liked it was that it did not only present some of the problems, which are pretty well documented, but I think it gave people a sense that these are issues that can be solved, that there is a certain level of empowerment. So, you know, my first question about what we've been talking about tonight is to each of the panelists, how do young black men see themselves? We're always talking about what men are in terms of statistics. How do they see themselves, given we live in a culture, or I think, and I think some of our newspapers and magazines and films are guilty of this, quite often the images being presented tend to be negative. Kevin, we can start with you.
Good evening, everyone. I wasn't expecting to go first. Hey, Ms. Hunt. I want to first thank God for this opportunity, OSI and the 21st Century Foundation. I think we should give them another round of applause. Because I was in the back watching the film, and I remember when Karen and Mario asked me to be interviewed for it, I had no idea what they were going to do with this thing. And I think the film is absolutely brilliant. I wish it existed 20-some-odd years ago when I was a teenager, because I could have avoided a lot of things that I'd gone through. And I think, you know, even though I'm a writer, I've actually written 10 books. I've only edited one or two of those books. I'm very clear that if we're going to reach young people today, it has to be through visual tools. That's so critical. How do young black men see themselves? Young black males see themselves? You know, as I was coming over here, I texted two of my colleagues from our group in Brooklyn, BAMIA, which stands for Black Male in America, Brother Gene and Brother Kendrick. I said, we have to do an intervention with one of our young males. He's a former gang member that we work with in Brooklyn, and he's on the fence, you know, and we're trying to make sure that this brother survives. You know, I think young black men are no different than many of us who came of age in the 1980s during the crack era. You know, we want to live, we want to survive, we want to win, but I know for me, back then, I was just happy to make it the 15th and the 18th and the 21. And unless you have some folks that are going to actually intervene in your life, as was so brilliantly put out there in the film, folks will say to you, you know, here's an alternative definition of manhood. You can go to college. You can get an education. You can do some things with your lives. I think a lot of our men feel very, very vulnerable. That's what I see on a regular basis, a great deal of vulnerability. But I think in a sense of not knowing quite what to do, which is why so many of us, including Susan Taylor, are pushing so hard for professional black and Latino males to be mentors in our communities. I can't stress that enough. Mentors in our communities. I hope that folks will take this film and run with it and show it in communities all around the country. And I think we've got to challenge folks, especially those of us who are privileged, to actually let these young men know that they don't have to see themselves as vulnerable. They don't have to think that death is an option. You know, the conversations I have with young males, folks actually thinking about picking out their coffins at 15, 16, 17 years of age. People thinking that college is something far-fetched. Folks actually dropping out of high school because they say, well, I'm just going to get my GED. That's become an option for young men now. Mm-hmm. And so it says to me, even in the last 20 years since the crack era, which we thought was the worst possible era for black and Latino males, and I have to say black and Latino because I grew up with both communities. You can't separate the two. I think that it's even worse now because of these destructive images. This, again, is why this film is so important, to see all those men up there saying, here's an alternative, but this needs to be constant with us. And I think as long as black males are getting negative images, we're going to continue to think that we have no options here. So, you know, I just want to say God bless those who put this film together because we need this film.
Kind of nervous. But I would definitely say us as black men, we definitely see ourselves as a constant struggle in a day-to-day life that we live. Maybe it'd be, you know, not having a father at home, not having a mother at home, just having one parent, just walking down the hood, I mean, walking down the neighborhood and seeing, you know, kind of images you don't want to see and you don't want to be around, and trying to be positive and being confused and knowing what's right and what's in front of you and what you might not be able to see. So it's a lot of confusion, and knowing yourself being a black male and going to sleep at night and waking up and not knowing, you know, you have a straight path to success, and you got to work a lot, especially in yourself and realizing who you are. So that's my answer.
I just want to take a moment to thank OSI and the 21st Century Foundation for allowing me to be part of the panel. You know, I speak as not only someone who works in the trenches, but as the mother and a single mother of a black son. And I think that there are many things going on. I think that there's the conflict, the constant conflict between the lure of the streets and the desire to be successful, and the desire to be successful in this society. I think, you know, as both panelists so eloquently said, you know, young black males, they want to succeed, they want to thrive, but there are so many environmental pressures out here. And while the reading, the writing, and the arithmetic is essential, part of the imaging and the success also has to be framed around the whole person, but not just the reading, the writing, and the arithmetic, but the character development. So there are so many images out there and so many lack of images as well. And I think, you know, it really is about feeling conflicted.
Good evening, everybody. First, I would like to and say that I'm very thankful for this opportunity as of right now to be up here, you know, speaking from my generation as a young man, as a young African-American man at that, to be able to speak to adults that you know, understand the cause and everything that I stand for myself and that I want for other people around me. For myself, as I feel that African Americans and young Latinos, we are being depicted in very negative ways, and such as, you know, you see us on TV, you know, getting locked up, or it's always something on the news, you always hear something negative, but where are the success stories? You know, you don't hear, oh, this student got into this college, or this student just finished making this $1 million deal, or, you know, you don't hear the success stories. There are. They're out there. You know, and I would like to say, you know, Eagle Academy is one of the success stories that a lot of people don't know about. And I would feel as if, like, the opportunities that I have received myself, that if I was able to give back to other people, you know, that would make a huge change. And it's that's like the big thing with a lot of people these days. You know, they don't really get the understanding of what else is out there, what positive things are actually out there. They just get into a stereotype of that, well, once you think of one way, everything is going to be negative. You know, and it really does not have to be that way, because it really isn't.
Absolutely. Good evening, everyone. I also want to thank OSI and Sean and your team, as well as the 21st Century Foundation, for really bringing this to us. This is a very powerful film. I'm very, very excited. I'm going to try to relax myself and not get too warm. Because as I'm watching the film, I'm thinking about all the ways in which I can use this film and people that I need to bring to the school. And I'm whispering to Jordan, right, as I'm sitting here and saying, we need to, every student that comes in the Eagle needs to see this as part of the incoming orientation. And I'm thinking about people that I need to bring to my house who need to see this. So stuff is just flying all through my head around how we can actually make this happen. I think it's important to say this first and foremost. Black children and black males are no different than anybody else. Okay, we have to start there. Because sometimes we do this level of inspection that kind of puts them in a place that makes it look as though we're studying some different form of human species or something. Black young men are the same as everybody else. They have the same desires, the same wants, the same needs. The issue is not about black males. The issue is about us as a society. And what are we doing, and what do we need to change so that we can make sure that they are whole and treated just like everybody else, right? So first of all, I am the oldest son of a wonderful mother and father who raised three boys. My father was a police officer. I am now, my wife and I are the parents of four children, including three young men and one daughter. Right, so when you cut to the chase, we start saying, hey, this is about the future Barack Obamas when we say black males. This is about the future leaders of our community. But for me, on a personal level, this is about who's going to marry my daughter. Let's be real. I mean, it was one thing. I used to say that when she was 8 and 9. Now she's 19. This is like real for me. And so we got to treat it in that fashion. So the life that you save, the young man that you impact, could be your son-in-law. He could be the young man that's going to be hanging around for a long, long time. You better get it right. I want the young men from the Eagle Academy who are here with me today, just please stand up. Let them see what some handsome young men are supposed to look like. All right? All right, don't get carried away. Y'all sit back down. Here's the story. So when the question, and I'm going to stop. The question is this. We have to recognize that they are just like everybody else. It is up to us to bring them what they need. But in a nutshell, what I see as the primary problem impacting young black males today is the lack of male, strong male positive figures in their lives. They have a lot of other things that are there, but their lives are out of balance because this generation, this hip-hop generation, if you will, is a fatherless generation. One of the most profound sentences that I heard really in the film Notorious was when the young man who took a bid for Biggie, when he came out and they sat together when Biggie was in the bed, and he said, you know what? We did the best that we could. Both of us grew up with our fathers, but we did the best that we could trying to figure out what it means to be a man. In a nutshell, that's the issue. That's the biggest issue for young black males. The lack of fathers, number one. but in the absence of fathers, otherwise strong male positive figures in their lives. And that's a piece that we've got to really get to if we really want to impact this this problem.
So let's have the panel talk about that a little bit, because Jeff Canada brings up that point in the film. He brings up two points that I thought were kind of interesting and provocative. One, he talks about the lack of fathers, not just models for manhood, but fathers in particular. Is that a problem, and how big a problem is it? And let's talk a bit about who's created that problem. Is it a problem connected to a lack of jobs? Is it a problem connected to men not believing that it's important for them to be in the household? And also, I'd like the panel to talk about another really provocative idea coming from Jeff Canada, which was that we are the only group in America that believes there is no connection between success and education. Is that true? Let's start with the fathers. And we can go in order, or we can go in whoever has the strongest opinions about this.
There's a lot to say. I want to say a couple things in response to some of the things that were said on the panel. This is I'm so glad again to be here. One of the paradigms and conversations that we had in the 20th century that I would love for black folks to leave in the 20th century is to do an either-or conversation. Either it's racism or we're the blame for the situation. I actually want to argue that it's actually both. Systemic racism is alive and well. If it wasn't, Mariel Van Peebles and Karen Williams wouldn't have talked about the failure of the school system, which is a system. We wouldn't talk about the prison industrial complex, which is a system. And so we got to be very, very clear that, yes, when we're born, and I'm a Christian and I believe that everyone is equal when they're born in the eyes of God. Amen?
Amen.
But for the moment that we as black and Latino males begin to grow, we are treated very differently. I remember it very well, how I was treated as a little boy, how when my voice started to change, how I was treated, how I started to be tracked by the police, how boys who were with me in school were beginning to be pushed back to the back of the class, how they were siphoned off to special education. And so I think that we have to be very clear. We have to have a critique of systemic racism, even as we challenge ourselves to do better, which speaks to Brother Banks' point, which I agree with. He was a part of a panel we did, what was it, a month ago, Brother Banks?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We had about 400 men show up in Brooklyn. Susan Taylor was a part of it because we put out a call. We need to find mentors for our young males in this country. This is unacceptable that women have been doing the work consistently, that you have a handful of brothers like Brother Banks and Brother Kyrie who do the work on a consistent basis, but by and large, a lot of men have been missing in action.
But Kevin, why is that? Why are the men missing?
Well, I have a few theories about this. I mean, one, I grew up without a father. How many men in this room grew up without fathers by a show of hands? Look at the hands around the room. You know, there was something that was mentioned by Mary Van Peebles in a film about slavery. We do need to, just like our Jewish brothers and sisters say, never forget, we also need to talk about what slavery did to our people. Let's be honest about this. And just because it was 160-some-odd years ago doesn't mean that the effects of it did not end. The reason why I was able to forgive my father at a certain point in my adult life is because I realized he basically had a slave mentality. He had been socialized, you know, going back to those plantations, that the only thing you're supposed to do is be a breeder, a baby maker. And unless men actually took responsibility and said we're going to go in a different direction in terms of manhood, that mindset got passed from generation to generation right on up to 2009, where you still have young men talking about the pain of the absent father. Number two, I do feel that something happened profoundly to black males coming out of the 1960s, early 1970s. You saw all these black male voices speaking out about issues around civil rights, black power, etc. But they're also, in my opinion, and I say this as a man, and I'm proud to be a black man, unlike the black female community where there was this whole body of work created around redefining black womanhood. You know, the work of Audre Lorde, Toni Morrison, Alice Walker, etc., that has not been a comparable body of work in the black male community, which is why we did the Black Male Handbook, because we're saying, fellas, do you realize many of us have been stuck for the last 40 years using definitions of manhood that are rooted 40, 50 years ago that are not relevant in 2009? And so I actually believe that part of the issue, too, is that many of us have not evolved. We're in a state of arrested development, and I'm talking about the adult males and the younger males, and as a result, we have these conversations over and over again about the absent father, and I mean, it is terrible to me, but this is where we are. And until we have those kind of honest conversations, we're going to continue to be begging men to be role models in our communities, begging men to show up as father figures, begging men to give child support. I mean, how many more times do we have to have those kind of conversations? So I think part of this dialogue has to be a real critical conversation amongst black men. You know, what is it to be a man in the 21st century? And even if you don't have biological children, are you willing to take some responsibility and be out there and represent just by your image those young men in your community? That's what's going on, in my humble opinion.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I think I want to say something. I definitely agree. Due to the effects of slavery, I feel like a lot of black men haven't had that internal role of leadership. And seeing that, you know, I'm a leader of the family, or not even a leader of the family, I just want to make a great role and contribute. A lot of people just sit around. A lot of people just, you know, they get confused when that baby actually comes out. And
wow.
They don't have that success, in which, you know, a lot of people were talking about in this movie, of reading and stuff like that. People can't read. People can't have jobs to support their children. So what do? They go back, get confused, go somewhere else and do the same exact thing and produce more kids and have fatherless fathers. And just like, it's a cycle that needs to stop. It needs to end.
Yeah.
And there's a point where, you know, people need to actually look in within themselves, learn the education of themselves first before they can actually make that step of saying, you know, well, I need to step up, and before I have a child, I want to make sure that you need to look in yourself and say, okay, well, I need to be a man. I need to be able to look everyone in the eye and say that, you know, I love myself and say that I'm willing to grow and make my community better.
Mm.
Whoever's in the community, white, black, whoever, just make it better. Because at the end of the day, it's about this whole world in its whole. Like it's just one link. It's just one link. We might have the struggles, but at the end of the day, we're just that one link that needs to see it and progress. That's my answer on that.
Cassandra, do you have a slightly different take as a woman?
I don't know if I know the answer to why fathers are missing in action. But what I do know is that there are a lot of men who want to be fathers to their children. And as mothers, oftentimes, you know, the children live with us and we are the gatekeepers. And for many, and I'm going to speak as a black woman, for many black women who come from the I don't need a man mindset, it stifles the father in terms of being involved with his child's life. Now, I'm not blaming the mother, so please don't.
Let me jump in here for a second. Do you think a lot of women?
I'm with that mindset.
Absolutely. I can do bad all by myself. And I think in the I can do bad all by myself thinking, we forget that, you know, this father cares just as much for his child as you do. So I don't come from the notion that fathers don't want to be involved. I think fathers want to be involved. And I think there are a myriad of reasons why they're not involved. I think some of it is fear. Some of it is not having role models. You see the baby, you don't know what to do about it. You feel overwhelmed. You feel like if you don't have a job, if you don't have an education, how are you going to feed this mouth? So I think the fear overtakes you. But I also think that the mother plays a key role in how involved the father becomes in terms of, does she open that door? Does she encourage the communication? If the child support check does not come in, does she still say that you can see your child? Because whether you pay child support or not, at the end of the day, every child loves their father. So I have a slightly different take on that.
Well, since I started it, let me say this. I think there are, I agree, there are a myriad of reasons why fathers are not necessarily involved. I just want to see us, and I don't sit here as though I have all the answers either. I'm just merely suggesting that that we don't have paralysis by analysis. That's the only issue that I have. That oftentimes we do so much deep research around this stuff, and we do all of the studies, but at the end of the day, then we don't do anything. You see, when we talk about the school, let me give the Eagle Academy. We started the school. This school was conceived by members of the 100 Black Men of New York, right? But be clear, it wasn't all 100 men. It was about four or five guys who conceived this, who started moving, and then the school came in to reality. Now there's a school in Ocean Hill, Brownsville section of Brooklyn, and there are plans to do several more schools. Something that sprang from the minds of four or five men who said, let's stop talking about it and actually do something. Well, you're not going to get men to stand up because they're just caught up in so many other kinds of issues. We have 150 men who have stepped up to become mentors at the school, made 3, 4, 5-year commitments to stay with that young man all the way through our high school experience. How did it happen? We asked them. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's not as deep,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, Reverend Wyatt was quoted in the film. You know, some of it is not that deep.
Now, there are some of us who are caught up, and I understand that. I'm talking to the brothers who are not caught up. Play your position. You step up. Because if you step up, you're going to serve as an inspiration to the other brother who's sitting around just talking about this problem. But if they see you get up on a Saturday and you're going to work and try to help some of these other young men who also don't have fathers, who are tired of watching you do the research and the analysis of this problem and are looking for brothers to say, who's actually going to do something? When Reverend Farrakhan called all of us together for the Million Man March, we were at the Million Man March, and I tell people all the time, the Eagle Academy happened as a result of the spirit of the Million Man March, that call to action. That is what I'm actually talking about. We need the books. We need the research studies. We need all those things. But we need more brothers to step up and stop just talking about the problem and actually do something about the problem, because these young men are sitting there and they're dying and they're waiting for the soldiers to step up and play their position.
But, well, let's talk a bit about solutions, because there are a lot of solutions we can talk about. We can talk about schools for young men and boys. We can talk about getting more men in the homes. We can talk about more men who are teaching. We can talk about education policy. We can talk about people being pushed out of high school as opposed to dropping out of high school. I'd like to just go down the table and have the panelists talk about one important solution that they see.
I think it's, for me, it's real basic. With our group of me at Black Men in America, it's mentorship and jobs, employment opportunities for our young males. I think nothing's going to change until we begin to figure out ways to get our young males employed. That's the number one thing we hear in Brooklyn. And I need to say this. Brooklyn has the biggest black community in America very quietly, 1 million people. So everything that you can see going on in Black America is happening in Brooklyn. And I agree with Brother David. You know, we cannot afford to just sit around and talk about it, which is why we, with BMEA, with Men United out of for Change out of Coney Island, with Man Up out of East New York Brownsville, we have several groups that are actually doing the work, just how he's doing his work with Eagle Academy, just how Kyrie's doing his work with Brother and Sister Soul. It has to be action. My only differentiation, again, I want to stress it, let's not get caught up in either ors. I actually think part of the challenge is that we have to teach our people to be critical thinkers. That's one of the things we've moved away from since the civil rights era. And so I think, you know, we have to say, what is the problem here? And we have to do. It's not an either or, it's both of those. And the brilliance of all our leadership, going back to Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Du Bois, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Dr. King, they all were critically analytical, but they also did. It's both that we need to have happen.
That's right. Solution would definitely be a lot of opportunities, way more opportunities, just for a lot of black men to get exposed to, you know, a lot of certain areas of, you know, maybe, you know, working in business, working, just having a job in general. I would definitely say another solution might be to change the curriculum in New York school public education. I'll be honest, it's complete crap. I went to a public school and I didn't learn anything. And the way that even though I didn't learn anything, the way I was taught, it still wasn't going to get registered because it just doesn't make any sense. A lot of education has to do with understanding, and you can't really understand anything if you learn from the middle of the book and you learn one chapter of that book just because it's going to be on a test in June.
Wow.
You're not really going to learn anything. You're just learning a part of a chapter. And I feel like, you know, that to actually learn something is to actually understand the origin and the stories of what you're learning. Because, yet again, everything's connected. That's my theory. I'll be honest. That's just how I think. And everything is connected. All our stories are connected.
Cassandra, so, just one solution? I know there are many solutions and many problems, but just one.
Two quick ones. I think it's education that doesn't solely focus on academics, that's also framed around the environment, the social needs of the young person, and character development. And second, very quick solution, is having folks sit down at the table, meaning people who are credible in the community, in the trenches, along with key people of influence who have access to resources and money. You need both groups together at the table in order to make things happen.
Well, I feel that one solution that has to come in play is that a lot of people have to understand the huge generation gap that is going on as of right now. Because, you know, you have adults that came up in a generation where there was somebody asked you to do something, you do it generation. And our generation, I feel that we are asking questions of why generation, which a lot of parents have a lot of problems with because, you know, they don't really understand that, well, I'm asking the question of why because I want more knowledge. It's not so much as I'm just trying to be disrespectful and I don't feel like listening to you. It's asking a question of why because I want to learn the reason why this is actually happening, why this is actually going down, and why, you know, I should be actually doing this. And if a lot of parents and people actually supported this and actually took the time to understand, you know, that a lot of, you know, students and kids, they're just asking a question because they want more knowledge. It's not so much as that, you know, we're trying to be disrespectful. So just feed the knowledge. You know, you don't always have to answer the question every single time. But, you know, one time, why do I have to do this? You know, it's nothing wrong with that. And
see, that's a critical thinker right there, right? Okay, what we're talking about.
And I mean, but more than that, just back to the generational gap, you have to understand that with us being a different generation, we're more of a hands-on generation. We learn in a different way. You know, a lot of people say, well, go read a book. You know, a lot of us don't think, oh, well, I'm going to read a book. How about taking a different initiative of reading a book online or having an audio book or having somebody read the book to you? You know, it's just different ways of different learning different things, and it's all the same goal. You have the same goal of, well, get this done, but everybody's just thinking in a different way of getting it done. And it's actually just a way of supporting us for what we actually are, not trying to get us to, you know, be coerced into a different way of learning. Just right. Actually learning for us, that's not right. Learning for you.
Absolutely,
on note,
beautiful.
On that note, I'm going to open this up to the audience. I'm going to ask you to step up to one of the mics.
We're going to do this studio style,
okay.
On the left side.
So
and,
Sean
Rashid,
is going to pass the mic.
For those that have comments or questions for the panelists, and we want to keep it crisp, and I know we have a few lawyers in the room, and so we want it to be a question as opposed to
a statement.
Yes. Okay. All right. So we'll start right there, Rashid. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Thank you.
Is he eats that chicken? And is that chicken?
This is directed to the young man who goes to Howard.
Oh, he's going to Howard.
I think out of everyone on the panel, and you're one of the younger people, I want to know if you see any differences with the issues that are facing young people here in New York versus people in D.C.
It's two different places, so I can definitely say that I know that my part in D.C., I help out. While I was at D.C. in my freshman year, I helped out with Big Brother, Big Sister. So I definitely went down to help out some kids in elementary school. And but the progress there is very slow. It's really improving here because I see a lot of new places opening up. And I'm hearing a lot about a lot of new organizations in New York, but you know, D.C. is improving, but it's just on two different levels. D.C., I feel like mentality-wise is way harder to work with than New York because it's just that socioeconomic, that place right there is just, it's hard. That's where I want to be because that's why I decided to go there, just to help out with a lot of issues like the homeless issues and just how people treat each other in general. It's been so many times I've been with conflict with, you know, people just saying hi to me when I'm walking down the street or, you know, not knowing me and just asking me who I am. And it turns to this whole, like, you know, ruffle of, oh, you're from New York. Doesn't mean anything. Like, it's just, you know, a lot of it is just, but D.C., I would say, is progressing, but New York is progressing way faster in the sense of it's been a key area for a while. You know, people saying, well, New York has been that place that, you know, a lot of black males are dying and stuff like that. A lot of people, I haven't heard a lot about D.C., me growing up. I heard a lot about New York. So I guess, you know, that next emphasis, next stage should definitely be New York. I mean, D.C. Yeah.
All right, I just got to make
like six line, not even six line statement. All right, so basically what I've noticed is that in terms of helping black males, there's always like a grade point average cutoff. There's always a background problem about we always want to help the more progressive people. So how can we move away from that towards working with everyone and not having a grade point average cutoff in terms of who you help and how you go into helping them?
I think that's an excellent question. I'm going to say this as someone whose mother did not allow him to get less than an A, K through 12. I don't care what a person's grade point average is. I don't care what their background is. I think we have to love all of our young people unconditionally. And I get disappointed. I do believe there needs to be standards. Once you get into a program or a school that you should strive for, back to the point of this film, bring your A game. We've got to keep stressing that. But I think as adults, if we don't understand all the environmental factors that may lead to a young person not having a certain grade point average, may not be able to go to school on a regular basis. I mean, I can tell you some stories of folks not being able to go to school because their mama was beating up their daddy. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of stuff that goes on in the household. I think, you know, adults out there who work with young people, one of the challenges is, you know, let's grab the young folks first. I mean, that's one reason why I admire a program like Brotherhood Sister Soul, because I know the kind of young people that Brother Kyrie and Jason and all of those folks bring in there. And their point is, like, let's meet them where they are, and then we try to bring them forward. So I think we got to be fluid with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree as well. I don't think that, but you're absolutely right. A lot of these organizations and initiatives have those cutoffs because they're really looking for the cream of the crop. They don't want to deal with the most difficult students, students who have the biggest challenges. And then they take a pat on the back because of the great job that they did with the great kids, right? But the reality is that there are no easy answers for any of it. But I will say, and kind of going back to that question you asked about a potential solution, you know, Kevin pointed out that there are more black folk in Brooklyn than any place else. And he's right. But there's also something else that they have more of in Brooklyn than any place else, and that's churches. Now, what we need is, I think we need a real Marshall plan around saving our young people, and that's going to call that needs real leadership. I mean, that's leadership at a very high level to get the leaders, not only in New York, but just around the country, to kind of say, okay, yes, we can't save the whole world, right? But let's figure out how we're going to save these young men in Brooklyn. Yeah. How do you get the leaders in Brooklyn to try to do the best that they can to get together and to say, we're going to have a call for every church.
Absolutely.
We're not asking you to save the world. But every church, you have to be connected to a school. A school, because the whole theme behind this film that we just saw kept coming back to education, right? And so I guess going back to my theme, how do you get it where it's beyond the Sunday morning sermon, where again we just talk about it? Every once in a while we'll bring a young man up there who gives a nice speech and everybody goes, oh, look at our young people, they're so wonderful. But in the meantime, that's not having a sustained impact. How do you get that church to say, We're gonna adopt IS 245, our church. That's our school now, because you would be amazed, absolutely amazed, at the impact that a church or a community-based organization with not a lot of people that it can have on one school. When that school, when you start talking about the fact of, you know, you were in school all those years and there wasn't a lot going on and you didn't learn much and the schools were crappy. You know how much of an impact you can have when you get 5-10 black men who walk into the school and say, this is our school, and we're not just doing a drive-by speech here, but we're investing in this school, we're going to be here, we're going to bring all of our friends. You can flip that entire place. The whole culture of that place can be turned around. That's what I mean when I say a call to action. But not paralysis by analysis. If you think of the problem as too large, all too often you won't do anything. You say, it's just too big, we can't solve it, and you go home and you don't do anything. Just go watch the game. But if you just take one piece and say, we're going to take one piece of the problem, I got this one school, my church got this one school, can't save all these other schools. But if your church goes and deals with the next school, and your church goes against it, and this community-based organization said, we got the one around the corner, all of a sudden, you got everybody covered, you would be amazed at the difference that can be made when you do that.
I'm Keith Hefner from Youth Communication. I want to go back to the film. David says he wants to show it at the beginning of school. I'm curious, Jordan and Antoine, let's say that happens at Eagle Academy, I forgot what school you went to, or even your middle school, which would be probably even a better age to show it. Could you guys talk a little bit about let's say they show it in an advisory. What's the reaction going to be? What's the discussion going to be? Who's going to be moved by it? Who's going to be skeptical of it? Who's going to talk? Could you just address that a little bit? Thanks.
Well, I think, first of all, like, the main thing that you have to understand is getting children at a certain age. Because if you're coming to us during high school, we've already gotten to a mindset of, I'm not going to do this, or I'm this way and I'm not changing for anybody because this is the way I am. If you get students at the middle school level, the elementary school level, where they're still learning, they're sponges, they're soaking up everything, and you're actually showing them success, you know, through film and through people that they look up to, then they will take it in a different way, as if, like, this is who I actually want to be. You know, a lot of schools are, you get out, and then you have your hustle man on the block, and he's like, well, I'll look out for you, shorty. And, you know, he's looking up to that man because that's the person that's out there that's helping him. But there's nobody else supporting him and actually being a positive role model in his life that's actually spending it the wrong, actually, you know, way that he really needs it. And that's where we really need to start, where it's young students actually going back to other young students and actually talking to them and saying, well, this is the actual road you need to take. I made mistakes, and these are the mistakes you need to learn from. Not only just making sure that, you know, you have older males coming, but you also need the student base, because peer-to-peer, I feel, anyway, that peer-to-peer is the best way to learn, because that's the actual person that somebody can actually relate to. You know, I might not be able to relate to Mr. Banks so much as because he's a little bit older than me, but I see a lot of things in him. But I might be able to relate to one of my brothers here who understand a lot of things that I might, and they might get something from me that I don't understand, that I might not get also. So it's just a more so of give and take thing between supporting and understanding of how do we get students to learn before it gets to a point where they can't learn anymore.
Mm. All right, I have something to say to these two right here.
I was going to answer that question. I would definitely answer your question by just saying consistency. And it just can't be like, you know, you show it one time. That definitely can't happen at all. It wouldn't change anyone at all. It would definitely have to be consistency through, you know, like maybe a video and then some sort of actions or some sort of, you know, some sort of class you might take for the rest of your years in school. So that to be a great start. That's a great start. That video right there, you know, it's very inspiring. See the numbers and see, you know, like people falling off the. It's very, you know, like visual. All that is very engaging for anyone at any age. So consistency will definitely change a lot of it.
That's great.
My name is Fabian. I also go to the school inside Eagle Academy, LGJ. I have a question for you two. Y'all said something about special ed, about kids pushing, getting pushed like forward instead of like teachers working with them and like push the special ed. Like, why do you think they do that? Like, why? I know that it's hard to work with like 32 students, but like, why do you think they just keep on pushing them along instead of trying to work with them? Like, why do you like build a program like to help kids like concentrating on certain subjects in schools? Like students, like teachers don't always concentrate on one kid. I know that, but like, why do you just don't help them? Like, work with them at least. That's my question.
Mm-hmm. From my experiences, because there was folks who was trying to put me in special ed when I was growing up. You know, the only thing that prevented that was my mother being a serious education advocate, showing up for school all the time, like, nah, you're not going to do that. I don't care what the racial, cultural background of the teacher is, black, white, Latino, Asian, doesn't matter to me. You have to be culturally aware and culturally sensitive of the young people you're working with in that particular area, whatever the school is. And one of the things I feel is that there's a perception from the moment that black and Latino boys get into the public school system, not just here in New York, but I've been to practically all 50 states at this point. This problem is all across the country, where it's automatically assumed that we're problematic. You know, it's automatically assumed if we don't want to sit with our hands folded that we have behavioral problems. And what you begin to see happen, I remember a bunch of boys that I grew up with who were slowly pushed to the back of class. Well, we may have different ways of learning. One of my best friends is a brother named Radcliffe Bailey from Atlanta, Georgia. He happened to be a visual learner. They put him in special education until he was in the 12th grade. This man turned out to be a visual artist. His work is owned by Spike Lee, who's in the film, by Elton John, etc. The only thing that saved his life was that his mother was a teacher. She supplemented that special education, quote unquote, with art classes on Saturdays. But think about all of our boys who end up through the cracks like that. So I think part of the challenge, you know, one, and this is one of the things, I'm hard on parents in our communities. My mother was a single mother, limited resources, but you all have got to be, parents have got to be advocates for their boys. That's critical. But I also think that those of us who are educators in the communities, we got to understand that, you know, there's a very different way of relating to, in my opinion, Black and Latino males in urban environments than there's other population. That's my humble opinion as a Black male. I think a lot of folks understand that. They either say, just go in the corner, or people are scared of us. And we need to be honest about this. A lot of folks simply fear us. And then what ends up happening is that we become disinterested. We don't feel that the curriculum is relevant to us because we're not seeing ourselves in the curriculum. And the next thing you know, these boys are dropping out of school or they're on the streets and they're in jail. That's what happens.
And let me say, it starts at a young age. My son is just about 5, and I'm fighting for him now because they are trying to put him in special ed and say he needs special ed services. So as parents, you have to be an advocate. And it's around 4 or 5, when boys start exploring the environment and jumping all over the place, one of the things they love, the label they love to put on them is attention deficit disorder.
Exactly.
And you know, I might not get invited back, but I have to say this. When you go into other communities, I'll say it that way, those children who are jumping off walls are engaging in art classes, they're painting, they're using their hands, but they're not labeled as ADHD, and they're not on no kind of psychotropic medication, meaning Ritalin and so forth. Now, here's the other piece of it. One of the things that more recent research is showing is that in the early years, 4 or 5 preschool years, kindergarten years, what we find with Black and Latino boys is that in the educational system, that they focus on fine motor skills, meaning holding the pen, writing. For Black and Latino boys, their strength is gross motor skills, which is using their hands and building. It achieves the same result. If I need to know 2 plus 2 is 4, I can learn that whether I write 2 plus 2 or whether I build a garden and realize that if I put these 2 tomatoes here and these 2 tomatoes here, I'm going to get me 4 tomatoes. The point that I'm making is that you can't be afraid to ask questions. When somebody says something over your head, you know, I say, excuse me, I was raised in the hood. Can you please explain what that means to me? And, you know, sometimes we're so prideful as parents, as Black people, that we don't want to ask questions when we don't understand something. And we can't be afraid to ask questions. We can't be afraid to go toe-to-toe with folks. And we can't be afraid to challenge the system. And when people put labels on your children, and for any young boy where someone wanted to put a special education label on you, I need to take a moment to say this, and I know our time is tight. It is well documented that Albert Einstein, E equals MC squared Einstein,
that's right,
could not speak until he was 4. The normal age for language acquisition is about 2 years old.
Right.
Couldn't read till he was 7.
Right.
If he was around in our day, they'd have him in a special education class.
Right.
He couldn't speak until he had something to say. And when he spoke, baby, it was E equals MC squared. So I say that to say that when people want to put labels on you that don't belong, you don't have to buy into that.
Right.
You can say, I am the head and I'm not the tail. There's greatness inside of me. There's genius inside of me. And if no one has spoken that, you receive that from me. I'll be your mama for now.
Right.
There's
right.
greatness inside you.
Right.
And that's important to hold on to because sometimes people can't see your greatness and your success, and you might be Albert Einstein's
say
in the
that.
Making.
Say that.
And all that means is that the educational system is not trained to capture your intelligence.
Yes.
That's all special ed means. You're
yes.
so special that the education system is behind your intelligence.
Mm, right. All right. Now, hold on, brother. Let me just make one. Because you talked about how it starts from the beginning. I was in the elementary school in Brooklyn for 6 years, and I saw that question. First of all, I want to say, what's your name again? Fabian. Fabian, that question, I think that was a phenomenal question. Because in many ways, what you're saying is, you know, why is it that they don't like me? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I heard as you were saying that. Yeah, they just move me on. They put me in special ed. They just keep pushing me. You know, I'm a good guy. Why are they doing that to me? And that's the reason why I'm going back to this point about why it's the community has to wrap its collective arms around an institution. if not, we're just saving individuals, but we're losing them, as Jeffrey Cannon says, we're losing them, saving them by the tens, but losing them by the hundreds. So we're still losing the war, and we'll continue to have these kinds of discussions. Because when you look at a film like Antoine Fisher, and he said, "Who cries for the little boy?" Right? What about that young man who's being pushed into that special ed program, who's brilliant and doesn't have that mother or that father who's there to protect them? And now they're just steadily being moved right into that program. So yeah, the other parents are coming up. So you're saving them by the tens, but losing them by the hundreds. See, to me, it's at a place now where it's about a level of individuality, but it's deeper than that. It's the collective community has to come together to say, we got this, and we're going to protect you, because I know your dad maybe, as the film said, your dad got caught up, he made some wrong choices, he's in jail, mom is overwhelmed, she can't even come up here for these hearings and these conferences that they're doing, and now all of a sudden next month, they got you too. And all the studies show that the special education population is a direct pipeline to prison. Okay? So that's why it keeps coming back to not that end of just saving one here and there, but how we have to come together and be smarter and be more strategic around how we save more.
Yeah, two more questions. Okay. This gentleman right here and then this young man right here after the gentleman.
I'm going to try to make this extremely brief. My name is Kendrick Nathaniel. I'm from Brooklyn. I've had so many questions because it seems like every time someone says something, it kind of arouses something in me. And I think I'm going to stay on the point that the young man just brought up, because to me, that's like the biggest concern. I'd have to go into a lot of detail to tell you how personal this is for me and how it just resonates over and over again. And that's what I'm wondering from the young people who I came here to learn something from. Like, is there one thing, two things that you guys don't get from us that if you had an opportunity to tell us you need? What is it? Because I think a lot of times we're trying to figure out things that you guys have the answer for. So if there's anything from you guys who are with these gentlemen at the Eagle Academy who probably have the time to sit around and think about it, and some of you gentlemen who aren't, but you just constantly think about what you're not getting, we need to know. We need to know. And while we sit around and crunch numbers and go back and forth amongst each other, I think it would make it easier if you told us. Any one of you, all of you, if one of you said it and everybody else agreed, just something, especially what you said, I got your point. And even though I can't relate to it in that specific context, I feel for you because I know how many of you do try and get lost and want to try again. And after a while, we push you into those circumstances or we just leave you there to fend for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think I'll answer that. I think one of the key things when it comes down to it is support. You know, like without mothers and fathers together as a collective whole, how can you push a child to actually really do or reach their full potential? You know, you'll have one parent raising them and they'll get overwhelmed, like Mr. Banks said. They'll get overwhelmed in so much that they can't really be in the child's life as they should be. And more so than that, it's not just a mother and father. As a community, we should be raising our, you know, children. It takes a village to raise a child. You know, it has to be a better understanding of that. Because it's not just, well, I'm in the community for mine and I'm going to get mine. It's I'm in the community for us and I'm going to make us better. It's more than just me, you know, myself and I. It's about us and making sure that the people, you know, under our generation for longer will come, you know, have a better future, better than ours. You know, it's more than just making sure that we learn from our mistakes, but making sure that other people learn from our mistakes and make sure that they get a better understanding of how to make and, like, work the system. You know, because a lot of students and a lot of kids, and I understand this is even from myself, I've even got caught out there. You know, and a lot of things have happened. And for myself, it's more so than just learning that and seeing it. You know, but it's going back to other students and understanding and saying, look, you know, you need to make this decision and this choice now. You need to step up now. You need to be active in things now. Because if you wait till later, what's going to happen? You know, you're going to be late with a lot of different things because there are a lot of other, you know, students. I'm not going to say white, but there are a lot of other majority students out there that are getting what they need to get done. And there are a lot of minority students that are just falling back and just letting things happen.
You know, and there needs to be a huge wake-up call with a lot of students that have to understand, you know, where do we want to go and how we're going to get there.
I would definitely agree on everything you just said. That was, you hit the spot right there. And I would just definitely say that, you know, a lot of people have to realize, especially us as the youth, we have to realize that you don't need a certain paper to say, you know, you're a high school graduate or you got a PhD to make action. You don't need any of that. You can have it. Of course you need to succeed, but I'm saying that at a certain point when you're in 11th grade, 10th grade, you can start an organization and change the world at 10th and 11th grade, just like a lot of people who have, a lot of people that we are inspired to, a lot of black heroes and stuff like that, they didn't have a lot of good education. A lot of people like Frederick Douglass, he had to learn how to read and all the other stuff. He didn't, it's just about action. It's about action. Hmm. At the end of the day, it's about having that paper to know you succeeded. And know that you can. Education is not just about having a paper; it's about understanding and the things that you know.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And your surroundings. So, another part in your life is making action of what you understand, and that's just the key part right there.
Time is tight. This young man's been waiting patiently.
Hi, my name is Alessandro. I'm from County Cullen. My question is, why do you think that most African Americans and Latinos drop out of school and Asians, white people, and Chinese people don't?
Well, I think it goes back to the main point of support, you know, that a lot of the majorities have the support and have the system to a key where their parents already knew what was going on and how to work the system. And, you know, our parents growing up, they really didn't have everything that they needed in order to really teach us where we really need to be going. You know, we have the support, and the support is there. It's just that we don't use it to our actual potential and full ability that we really need to. Like, you know, for the Eagle Academy and myself, I would have never thought 4 years ago that I would have had a mentor that would have stuck with me for 4 years. An actual black man that is still here in my life for 4 years. You know, and it's something that is shocking, but it shouldn't be. Right. It really shouldn't be shocking that a black man is stepping up and taking charge. You know, it really, to me, it feels as if, like, that's what's supposed to happen. It's not supposed to be something, oh, a black man stepped up today. That's supposed to happen. He's supposed to take care of his business. And more so than that, just stepping up for a son or somebody that you know, step up for somebody else that you don't even know. For a young man that you don't know in this room right now. You know, just come up and step up and say, hey, I understand everything that you're going through because I've been through it myself. And actually go to him and talk to him and, you know, make a connection. Because that's all that we really need is a huge connection. Just to make sure that we get where we need to get going because we understand where we want to go. We just don't have the real knowledge of how we want to go there. You know, how do we get there? If we have the support, and it's really just key that we have the support in order for us to have the backing and understanding of where and how we're going to get where we need to get going.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Good job.
We have someone over there in the seat.
Hi, I just had one quick comment. There's so many things today that really, really moved me about being here, but I think the biggest is that OSI and the 21st Century Foundation have made space for the young men to be a part of the discussion today.
That's right.
So I just want to thank you guys for that.
That's right.
The question that I had is directed not just for the young men on the panel, but also the young men in the audience today. And what I wanted to know is, who do you feel speaks for your generation? I think that all of you are so eloquent, especially the young men up there. But are there certain people that you would say speak for your generation? Like, I look to Kevin Powell and, you know, as an example of who speaks for my generation.
Thank
I'm wondering,
you.
Are there people I'll that you identify to speak for your generation, and also not only who speaks for your generation, but what are the means of outreach that are most valuable to you? You know?
To answer that question?
I
feel like right now in this point, I'm going to be 20 in a month, and I don't really see a specific person who speaks for my generation. I would say that we speak for our generation right now because we're like the roots of our generation. So I would say that, you know, our own organizations we're trying to create in our own actions right now are, there's no like real one person who's like 20 years old or, you know, a part of my generation who's, I can say, I look up to. I say that, you know, a person who I might see in D.C. who's like a poet or person who's a community organizer themselves, I can say I look up to them. Not a general, you know, figure who I'm inspired by, but of course I'm inspired by the past generations of, you know, leaders and thinkers and just people in my life. So, yeah, that's my answer.
Well, I feel more than just, you know, people that we look up to, but we also have to look up to ourselves.
Right.
You know, there has to be some level of understanding where I can say to a friend, well, wow, I can't believe you just did that in that way, and look up to my friend. You know, not just saying, well, I have to look up to, you know, somebody that's a celebrity or somebody that's making money, but somebody that just has the characteristics of being an actual good person. Right. You don't have to be money. You don't have to, you know, have money in order to be a good person. So I think it's just a level of understanding and commitment to, you know, a lot of young students that where they need to understand like a peer-to-peer thing where they need to talk to each other and inspire each other to push. Because, like, I feel like, especially at Eagle, that, you know, that we do that. We push each other to get the best grades. We push each other to be the smartest. Mm. You know, it's more so of a brotherhood thing where it has to come down to pushing ourselves, but also pushing, you know, the next person to you.
Kevin?
Yeah, this has been incredible. I could sit here all day and listen to the younger brothers speak because when we were talking about solutions, I think part of the solution is making sure that we never do events like this again without including the voices of young people. This is incredible. And I know I've learned a lot just listening to them. I think, too, you know, solutions in Brooklyn, where our work is based. Kendrick, who asked the question, myself, Gene, Brother Gene's in the audience. You know, identifying the groups that actually are doing the work out there on a regular basis, that's critical, and linking with each other, which I also think is on a micro level what 21st Century Foundation is doing on a macro level, which is what's happening in all these cities around the country, who are the organizations, let's put it on our website. I really want to challenge the adults out there, no matter what part of New York City you come from, are you engaged in your community in a way that you're making sure young people are getting access to the information and resources that are there? The big problem we see in Brooklyn a lot is folks don't know where to go for the information. They have no idea where to go, you know, to apply for college, how to get into CUNY, how to get in the SUNY system, how to get a GED, what to do if they just got out of prison, where do they go for job training. So our work is really about putting together resources of information for our communities there. So I want to stress that to people because I think, you know, when we talk about support for these young males, I think the most critical thing is teaching them how to be self-empowered at the end of the day so that they at some point can also begin to become, you know, they're leaders. These two young brothers are leaders already as far as I'm concerned. You don't need to be, I don't care if you're 15, 20 years old, you're a leader. The fact that you have a microphone and you have some thoughts about this world and you've lived, you know what I mean? That's how I feel. And then your responsibility is to make sure you reach back to other people and share with them. And that's what I got when I went to Eagle Academy, when Brother Banks invited me up there. I was like, this is the kind of space that we need to have. The same name of Brotherhood, Sister Soul, what we're trying to create in Brooklyn is making sure that as many of us as possible are becoming informed, but also reaching back. Because I was going to say initially, you know, the problem is the failure of Black and Latino leadership. I'm not going to say that anymore. You know what? We got to be the leadership we're waiting for at this point. It's just, that's just the answer.
That's exactly what it is. Got to come down to those of us who are already out here.
Exactly.
We're not looking for some big bad leader to come.
Right.
The answers are right here in the room. We have to develop, as my good friend Ron Walker would say, a conspiracy of care. Where all good people really come together. I just want everybody to take note of one thing here. Do y'all see the energy up here in the front of the room? Huh? There's some mamas in the room. Y'all see these boys who can't sit still? Special ed. They want to put all of them in special ed, right? The reality is that these are some brilliant young men. Where's Lil Kevin? Kevin, stand up. He had a question. This will be a perfect segue. Kevin, stand up. Remain standing, Kevin. Now, Kevin, how old are you? Kevin,
12.
Kevin, I'm talking to you.
12?
Kevin's 12 years old. I thought you were younger than that, Kevin. Kevin, I've been watching him the whole time. Kevin started out over here. I don't know if you... Kevin been in about four different seats tonight. And then Kevin's got all his little friends over there. There's a level of movement and energy while all you adults are doing your thing. We're doing our thing.
That's right.
They just bouncing and moving and can't sit still because that's what boys do.
Yeah.
You have to have people in a classroom who understand that, who say, okay, we time out. forget the lesson plan for a minute. Everybody stand. We're going to stretch. We're going to run in place for 10 seconds. Let them yell. Let them scream. Let them get it out. And then back, focus, and doing what they have to do. Unfortunately, we have too many people in our classrooms who don't understand that energy. You have teachers in the front of the room, predominantly white women, because those are the people who are actually in the classrooms, particularly at the elementary school level, who mean well. They're good people. It's not a knock against them. They're the ones who are educating our children. And they went to school. They were good. They sat in the front row, right? They folded their hands. They were not aware of Lil Kwame and Malik in the back. They didn't even know that they were there. They were oblivious to that. That was not even part of their reality, okay? They were focused on Ms. Johnson, and they said, that's what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be just like Ms. Johnson. And they sat, and they were focused, and they were disciplined. They went, and they got their degrees. They were never taught this stuff in school. And now here they are back in the hood in the front of the classroom, and lo and behold, there's Malik and Kwame. And they have no idea what to do. But you can't blame them. Right. Doesn't make them bad people, not at all. But we have to help prepare and train them so that they can train our young men, because in so many ways, the future of our community really is in their hands. And that's what we need to do. So we got to, as my good friend would say out there in Houston, Texas, we got, he said, he does a workshop. You got to get your white girl right. It's a little provocative. It's a little provocative. Just take a minute. Take a minute. Say, you are my best friend. I need you. All my little guys, my little Kevins are in your hands, but I got to make sure that you know what you're doing.
On that note, thank you. Kevin came all the way over here to get the mic, and we're going to conclude the Q&A session with Kevin, and then we're going to close out. Okay, Kevin.
Excuse me. Is I wanted to ask why is not enough. I wanted to ask why is not enough black teachers in schools.
Question. That's a good, great question.
That's a very good question. Just quickly, quietly, loudly, repeat that question.
Why is there not enough black teachers in middle schools?
Schools in general. Elementary.
There are not enough black teachers in schools, period, first of all. And I think that's another area that we can really focus on, develop some initiatives around incentives that for our folk to go into teaching. And the folk who are there, are very often they're either in a lot of women at the elementary school level and more of the men at the high school level. When I was an elementary school teacher for 6 years, I was one of only two black male teachers and a staff of 64 teachers. Only two black male teachers. And the other gentleman was an older gentleman. I was the only young black male teacher in the entire school. Wow. So so our young, many of our young men will go through school K to 8 without even having been taught by a black male teacher. And that's just black male. So, Kevin, that's a great question. We don't have all of the answers for it. But I think those are the kinds of things that, you know, the people from 21st century and OSI, and those are those deeper kinds of issues that we've got to really look at, how to respond to a very simple yet very profound question, and how do we begin to have a greater impact. There are some programs around the country, Call Me Mister, which is based out of South Carolina, where they are providing incentives for young for black males to go into teaching. And I think those are the kinds of programs that can, in fact, be replicated around the country. But before any of this happens, we have to have nationally, this has to be declared a crisis. This situation that's happening with black males has to be declared a national crisis. Because once it's declared a national crisis, then you can have a Marshall Plan that's going to really throw major resources around solving it. And so that's where we have to work toward.
This portion of our evening, I want to say thanks so much again to our panelists.
Let's give Felicia Lee a round of applause for moderating. Not an easy task at all. We want to thank our panelists. We've run it slightly into overtime, and there's a lot of passion around this, so I'm going to ask everyone just to bear with us for 3 more minutes. We have a young person that is going to give a final word, but before that, we're going to ask Reverend John Vaughn to kind of tie this together. On the part of OSI, we know that this film cannot be shown in a vacuum. It has to be shown in a setting just like this and as a tool for organizing, for policy change. While the closing credits come on the film when it's over, that's really just the beginning of the film. So I'm going to ask John to say a quick minute, and then we're going to ask who's coming up, Rashid, Saquon, to close us out for the evening.
So I just want to let people know, please fill out your evaluations. The feedback is very helpful. We will be rolling this out, hopefully in New York, this fall. So you'll be hearing from us in terms of opportunities to both for that rollout and hopefully to try to catalyze additional activity. Many of you have already asked about, is the film available? Well, it is not available yet to get it to you. But once that showing on BET happens, at 12:01 the next day, we will make it available to you. All right. So, but we need to know though, if you want it, you need to let us know on these sheets, so that we can make sure that you get it once it is available.
Thank you, John. I think it's only fitting that we close the evening with a word from a young man, and his name is Saquon. And Saquon, you're from Brotherhood Sister Soul.
Yeah.
Okay, so Saquon is going to have the final word.
Okay, I'm just going to say a few things. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me well? All right. You can still hear me, right?
Yeah.
All right, good. I go to Brandeis University. I'm glad to be invited to come here today. I felt really inspired, really nervous, but overall just excited to write new things from what I've heard tonight, as well as share the information that I gained tonight. So I'm going to share a piece with you called Reality. Who am I? Because I've been called so many things in this judgmental society. Regardless of my scenery, there's still misplaced anger locked within these multicolored human beings. I've always stopped and dreamed, spaced out to distant wonderland galaxies, but still a fiend for answers locked within the human genes. My mind is spiraling, too busy being caught between who I am and what it is I want to be. And it's funny because they call my thoughts poetry. So when my levee's broken seems, my mind just had to spring, transporting light to multiple nocturnal beings. As I ask myself, why is it most originate from poverty? My answer, governments are just legalized mobs, taxing the people so we can be all that we can be. Race and sex don't matter because your money's birth to squash your beefs. Taught to share at home, but selfishness is my hood's number one philosophy. How can we adapt when we can't even change our own communities? Complications running all through the streets like stars in astrology. And it can't be helped because the media is spewing more lies than tales in Greek mythology. I've lost myself too many times in this market full of wannabes. Awaits market schemes will be finding cunning ways to manipulate the coming seeds of humanity. Headphones latched on the pregnant belly, so we've got babies swimming to the latest gangster beats. So tell me, how could this be reality?
Wow, and we could go on for another hour, but we won't. And we have everyone's contact information at OSI here who attended in the 21st century, and we will keep you posted and abreast on what's going on and what's happening with Bring Your A Game. We want to thank you so much for coming out.